You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Tuesday, October 30th. I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, and this is your daily look at the Cavaliers and part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. Today's show, just so you know, may sound a little bit more echoey. I am in the process of moving. That's why there hasn't been a show in 3 days, but I'm not fully set up in my new house yet, so I only have one spot to record. It's a more echoey room that should be fixed here in the near future, hopefully by the end of this week. So thank you. Apologies for the more echoey sound you're hearing on today's show, but it will be better, I promise, by the time we do more shows later this weekend for the rest of the season. But today's show is with Greg Schwartz-Fleur from Bleacher Report, talking about the Ty Lue firing, talking about Larry Drew, Kevin Love, how the Cavs should tank, a whole bunch more. So stay tuned. Here is my conversation with Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report, and we'll be back tomorrow recapping tonight's Cavs-Hawks games. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Greg, so let's take this back to Sunday. So the Cavs fired Ty Lue. It's middle of the day on Sunday. Somehow they beat the Browns to firing a head coach, and in the Browns' case, two coaches. But we're here with in a tie post Ty Lue world. I have not talked about this in the pod. You and I haven't actually talked about this to each other yet. But we're a little over a day removed from the firing. What was your just initial reaction, and how, if at all, has it changed since it happened?
Yeah, I was really surprised. With it being so early in the season. I mean, we've seen, the Phoenix Suns fire head coach pretty early last year. And it's just for the Cavs to come out and, kind of play up all summer about, how Ty Lue was just going to be this great leader and he was going to be so good for Colin Sexton, being a former point guard. And I go back to last summer and the press conference that Dan Gilbert sat up there with Kobe Altman and, things were plunging into chaos and LeBron was going into his contract year and Kyrie Irving was requesting a trade out of Cleveland. And I go back to Kobe Altman sitting up there talking about, we're not talking about Ty Lue and he's the rock of this team and he's our culture center. And I went back and watched that interview and I'm just like, wow, things can change just so fast. And just all the praises he was heaping about how Ty was the rock and the foundation and the cultural centerpiece and all these just, wonderful words that he was using to describe Ty Lue. And yeah, we're going to give him 6 games and he's fired. So it's just amazing how quickly your life can change in the NBA.
Yeah, and Ty is still owed $15 million, which is not an insignificant amount of money for anybody. I was very caught off guard by this. I saw it. I did the double take on my phone when I saw the notification. I am still I'm in the process of moving, so it's just like been hard to keep track of every little morsel that has come up. But the thing that I keep coming back to when I think about this is I find it very weird that there are things that they didn't know that what they're saying 6 games into the season, that Ty's vision and they needed someone else at the helm of this. I don't know how you don't know what you're getting in Ty before this season comes. Like, how Ty has approached this, what Ty has said about this, what Ty had said in training camp, frankly, and immediately every instance that he has talked about the veterans, how he's handled this and sort of what the reasoning seems to be for his exodus here is not at all surprising to me. I don't know if I think that what he said is out of character or was surprising in any way. I'm surprised that it is 6 games. I kind of could have seen him gone at the end of the year, but how Ty has approached the season was not a surprise to me. And if the Cavs didn't get that or didn't expect that's weird to me. Like that to me just seems like that a conversation you should have had a very clear understanding of how this is going to be approached. I don't know these details. I have questions that I think should be answered and should be asked to everybody. But I think that's a complicated thing, and that to me looks weird to me. If you didn't know that this is the tie you're going to get six games, you know, like I can understand some of the concerns about the scheme, the concerns about not doing different things, you know, whatever. But I feel like the tie you got was the tie that you should have expected coming in. And if you're firing them in part, at least in part, because of that seems weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the team is underperformed. Like, they're not. It's not a great roster. Nobody's going to say it's a great roster. But when you look at them and you're like, oh, you're 0-6, and you know you got handled mightily by the Hawks and the Nets, and you know were down by at least 20 points or more in your first four games. Like, yeah, you've underperformed. Maybe part of that's on the head coach. I get that. But that just seems like that was part of it. You know, you go back and forth between, you know, are we playing Korver and JR? Are we not playing Korver and JR? Are we, you know, there's the front office reportedly wanted to start Colin Sexton right away. And Ty Lue comes back and says, no, I want to start George Hill. Aren't these conversations we could have had during the summer? I guess I don't understand that. Like, you knew you had Colin Sexton and George Hill from late June, and we are into October, and now that becomes, you know, an issue. And you knew you had JR, and you knew you had Korver. You knew you weren't going to trade JR. Nobody was going to trade for him. Like, you knew that these issues were going to come up. And the fact that we kind of went into the season and now we're having disagreements about this, I guess I just ask, was there no plan, or was it like, well, let's do it my way, and if it doesn't work, then we'll do it your way? It just seems like Kobe Altman and Ty were not on the same page, which, you know, it's normal to have disagreements. You see it all the time in the league between front office and coaching staff, but, you know, it's not like they made this huge trade a week ago and now they have all these pieces that they don't know what to do with. It's essentially been the same roster for a while, and there's been a plan there. And you could say, yeah, they've underachieved, but is that a reason for firing a guy after six games? I just thought the timing was kind of really curious.
I agree with the timing. I also think, like, it's this isn't a move that is going to help you with some of these veteran issues, right? Like, if you look at the guys that are unhappy, and a JR's social media presence is basically just a billboard for how miserable he is. Kevin Love has not seemed particularly in a good mood in the last time he talked, and he's obviously been out, and we're going to get to him later, but he could be out a month at this point. That's not great either. George Hill, I haven't seen him in the locker room after games in a while, but I can't imagine he's particularly having one based on his experience in Sacramento last year. Tristan's been very frustrated and very vocal. I think when he's talked to Kyle, has handled things very professionally as Kyle Korver's going to do, but I don't get the sense that he's particularly thrilled either. And all these guys want to play. All these guys want to be in a good situation. I think this 0-6 start, where the Cavs are the last winless team in the NBA, with the Thunder having beaten the Suns, I don't think this is the type of situation that any of these guys, if you go back to their preseason comments, really were hoping to get into. And I don't think firing Ty is going to help that any malcontent, help that pushback anymore. You know, like for someone like Colin Sexton too, like, it's got to be really jarring for him to have his head coach fired six games into his rookie season. For Jetty Osman, the only NBA coach he's known for, Ante Zizic, like, Damon Jones is gone too. And that's another guy. It's a lot of change. It's a lot of things being thrown up in the air. No soup, fortunately, being thrown this time in the direction of Damon Jones on his way out. But, like, it's just a lot of upheaval for a team that has already been very dramatic, been very bad, and is very clearly headed to just being a dumpster fire all year. This is just about as wild and as all over the place start as you could get. And it's, I don't think there's anything they could say, anything they could do in the next week, this season, that's sort of like, can avoid that from being a reality at this point. I feel like this path is clearly headed in one direction. That's losing a lot of games, and this team just not proving that it's competent at all in a post-LeBron world this year. I just don't think it's possible at this point. And it's like, maybe Ty had to go. Maybe he wasn't the right coach for this type of environment, and I can understand that. I think that's a fair argument to make. But six games probably isn't enough to know that, and it doesn't help the roster you already have that's not exactly going to be easy to tear down.
Well, let me ask you this. Because as soon as LeBron leaves, I am on total team rebuild. Like, I don't think this is going to be a good team. The pieces don't really fit anymore. Like, you know, what do we want to be? Do we want to be this, you know, are we going to start Colin and Chetty and our young guys? Or are we really just going to be, you know, let's get big minutes out of George Hill and Tristan Thompson and Korver and JR and really shoot for this eighth seed. And then, you know, what's the best thing that's going to happen? That didn't make sense to me. I've been on team rebuild and I kind of like they tricked me. They tricked me into thinking this was going to be a team that's decent. I'm like, oh yeah, Rodney Hood. He's gonna drop 18 points a game.
And
we're gonna see the Utah version.
He may take like 20 mid-range shots to get there.
Oh god, yeah, that could be a whole nother podcast. But like the point I'm trying to make is they fooled me. Like I thought, oh my god, this team is gonna suck. They're gonna be terrible. And then, you know, you get the Love extension. And you're like, oh, yeah, I started getting a little confidence in this team. Like, he wants to be here. And you know, look how good, you know, Jetty's doing in the national team. And Jordan Clarkson with his national team. And we got Larry Nance back before you. Like, they tricked me. I made my official predictions, and I put them at eighth because I was looking around the rest of the bottom of the East. I'm like, oh, they're not better than the Cleveland. You know, Cleveland's better than these guys. And now I'm just back to, oh man, I was right at the beginning. I'm like, this is not a good team. And I'm curious, did they trick you at all into thinking they could be good, or were you smart enough to realize that, yeah, this probably isn't going to be a playoff team?
I had at some point said that they were going to be better, but I came back off that after kind of thinking about it closer to the season. I just became convinced that there were too many holes on this team, and that's just like, this team shouldn't be. I'm full rebuild really well, and they had a really good opportunity to do it too, right? Like, they could have just flipped Kevin Love for something this summer, just dealt with what you had on the roster, and just tanked. And yes, maybe picking number eight and isn't the optimal way to do it. Like, you weren't going to get a Trae Young or a Doncic or an Ayton or anyone of that caliber, but like, you could get something, and maybe Sexton still is something. It's way too early to kind of write him, his narrative, his story in any way. But like, they picked a weird path, and maybe they're going to trade Kevin Love later, and some of this money will come off the books, all that stuff. But I was team as well, and I just, the more I thought, oh yeah, Kevin Love will help them in some way, and he's been really bad, and that could be due to the foot, the toe injury that we know he has now. And like without him, it's just like, you have no hope. And just the profile of this team is not great either. But we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about all the other Larry Drewness and other things going on with this Cavs team. So we'll be right back with Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. Today's podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on, and the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. This is a great site. When you win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in a game. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. And if you visit MyBookie online today, that's MyBookie, MyBookie, and use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus, you're going to win, you're going to play, and you're going to get paid. This is a great service. They're a great supporter of the Locked On Podcast Network, and betting there is a safe way to bet and have a good time doing it. So use that promo code Locked On and go get your bonus from MyBookie today. And we're back with Greg Schwartz. So, Greg, just kind of continuing where we left off before the break, one thing that really has stood out to me is just how... Two things about the Cavs, just overall aesthetic this year, and then we'll talk about Larry Drew, but they take a ton of mid-range shots. I think at the last time I checked, it was more mid-range shots than three-pointers in terms of percentage of overall shots. And they weren't running any sets that were particularly different from what they would sort of run with LeBron. I understand there's going to be an adjustment period, but just the how many things just look the same or just weren't working, and even if you're practicing more and all these things, like, there's just a lot that was not working, and the switching defense and that changing every game. Like, there's just a lot of scheme things that I did not reflect well on Ty as a coach. It doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in Larry Drew either, but just when you've watched this team so far with what they've been, was there anything that you were like, when Ty got fired and you knew they were making a change, you were like, oh, like, there's something there that they, you feel like that could have, should have saved his job, or at least been something Ty could have rested his head on in some way? his hat on in some way, excuse me.
Well, I've just been shocked at, like, I think the last time I checked, we are dead last in three-point attempts. Like, that's really surprising for a team that's, you know, obviously with LeBron spearheading that and creating so many open looks, you know, the last 4 years, just to be dead last in that category when you've got Kevin Love and Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith and George Hill and Jordan Clarkson. You have a lot of three-point shooters. And the fact that they've settled on so many mid-range looks, and a lot of that, you know, like you kind of touched on, is Rodney Hood. Like, this is 2018. This isn't 1998. And it just seems like we are going backwards in terms of when you look around the league and you look what successful teams are doing. You know, outside of the Spurs, the really good teams the past 4 years shoot a lot of threes and make a lot of threes. And, you know, obviously there's some exceptions to that, but, you know, Houston's always kind of beating the drum in terms of three-point number of three-pointers taken, and they're obviously had the best record in the entire NBA last year. And just the fact that this offense is, you know, kind of going back to the Stone Age of the 90s, and we're not embracing what modern basketball is. And it's analytics. It's, you know, what is the best percentage of quality looks that we can get. And it just seems like they're so happy to settle. And a lot of that is, yeah, you don't have a playmaker like LeBron that's going to get you a lot of these looks.
Incoming is Jordan Clarkson, like, did that gif of him, like, strutting, like, after a made bucket. Like, that's Jordan Clarkson entering this conversation. Like, he's the playmaker. Like, that's where we're at, like, realistically. That's, like, not great. Like, they have Kevin Love, and who's not been good, who's been hurt, and Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood, and Sexton trying things, and Jetty making a lot of mistakes. Yeah, it's not great.
My favorite, and I don't remember what game it was. I think it was maybe game three. And, you know, you watch the game and you're like, oh my God, like, you know, a lot of things don't stick out. And then you check the box score and Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance led the team in assists. When your two centers are leading your team in assists, not your point guard, because George Hill has had multiple games this year where he has not registered an assist. And in games where he's playing 20, 25, 30, 30 plus minutes a night, and you're relying on Tristan Thompson to set up other guys for baskets. Something is severely wrong with your offense. And a lot of that is personnel. You know, George Hill is who he is. I think his career high in assists is four a game. I mean, he's more of a combo guard. Colin Sexton, obviously in college and summer league, has never put up more than, you know, about 3.5 assists per game. And, you know, assists isn't even a tremendous stat when producing, you know, shot creation for other people, but it does help to tell the story. But when you look at the box score, Tristan Thompson led us in assists tonight. That can probably tell you all you need to know about how that game went. And the fact that Colin Sexton is trying to get his development on the bench next to Jordan Clarkson, the human black hole, oh, Lord, that's just not a good pairing. And you could say, well, look at Clarkson. He's putting up, you know, 16 points a game and he's actually having a good statistical. Just look at the team stats when Clarkson is out there. It's not good. The team does not produce well when he's out there hijacking the offense. And if he can't even give you, I'm not even asking for three assists per game out of, you know, Jordan Clarkson. But now if he can just give me two, give me 1.5, Jordan. Like, it's just so ugly to watch how they don't make the extra pass, how they don't make the extra attempt, because they've had LeBron to bail them out for the last 4 years. And, you know, even Kyrie, we know, was not a great playmaker, but he could at least get you five a game. He could at least, you know, draw a little bit of attention offensively as a playmaker getting to the rim. Just offensively, aesthetically, like, this is just the hideous team to watch right now.
Looking at Larry Drew, he comes in, he's been an NBA head coach before, not a particularly successful one. I don't even, like, care really what he's going to do in terms of changing things. I just want to see what he does. That's more interesting than discussing it. But what do you make of just the idea that he is trying to basically get some kind of commitment from the Cavs? If I'm the Cavs, like, If you have to pay him a little extra just to get him to be the interim coach right now, I would probably do it. But there is no way that they should be hiring and committing to a coach right now. Like, maybe Larry Drew blows them away and he becomes the head coach. Maybe they hire Mike Brown for a third time and spin it as he learned from Steve Kerr. Like, Byron Scott's out there. David Blatt's contract is about to be up in Europe. I'm just saying. We're a long ways away, I think, from actually them picking a coach and really kind of they're going to have time to look at this. But what do you just make of this Larry Drew situation? Like, it seems like he's going to coach, but like it doesn't seem exactly as like him and the organization are really even on the same page of what his title is, and that's a little bit weird.
All right, so to kind of sum up what you're talking about, and a lot of this came from Joe Vard today of The Athletic, so for people who don't subscribe to The Athletic, basically,
especially right now when there's not like seven people on the Cavs beat anymore. They're like, you don't have McMenamin and Varden and Fedor and Lloyd and then like all the blogs and you, and like now it's basically just like Joe. If you want inside info, it's like Joe. Like Lloyd showed up today at media, and that's like the first time he's been there in a while. He's doing his columnist now, and it's like what he wants to do, and I get that. But yeah, continue.
Right. And so, I mean, like, if you want to learn about the Cavs, like, you have to subscribe to Varden because he's getting very, very good at this job now. And the fact that what he was reporting today was coming, like, I mean, it was direct quotes. It was coming straight from Larry Drew, where yesterday was reported that he had accepted the role of interim head coach. And Varden asked him today, and he flat out said, no, I'm not the interim head coach. I am the voice of the team. I think I'm getting that right. He said he's the voice of the team, which is saying, yeah, I could be if, you know, they meet my demands for contract and length and title and all that, which is a little bizarre, right? Like, we don't really see this from interim head coaches. Like, normally these guys are like, yeah, I'll be happy to take over and, you know, kind of do, like, I think Memphis last year with J.B. Bickerstaff, like, I don't remember hearing this discrepancy between titles of what the organization believes he is and what it's reported he is and what the person who's actually taking the job says he is. So it was reported that he was. He came out and said, no, I'm not. I'm the voice of the team. And another kicker in the article was, you know, he was talking about what he wanted to kind of go over with Altman about his vision and what he wanted to do, and basically said, I'm not going to talk about that with him until I get my salary and my title cleared up, and which, you know, he wants to be the head coach. He wants a long-term commitment. He said he's been through rebuilding as a player, as a coach. He's okay with it. Like, he's embracing it. I don't think Larry Drew is ever going to get a head coaching job in the NBA again. And I think he's looking at this. He's 60 years old. He wasn't super successful as a head coach before. I know he did have a winning record in Atlanta, but I think this is probably his last chance. And I think he looks at that as saying, I need to leverage this situation. You know, this team is being plunged into chaos. I've been here for years now. I want a commitment from this team. I don't blame him for trying to do it. I mean, you look at all the negotiations Dan Gilbert's tried to have with either coaches or executives, you know, over the past couple of years. It hasn't gone real well. And why would this one go real well either? So I think in the end, he's probably going to get a nice raise from the $1 million he's making this year as associate head coach. He probably will accept the interim head coach tab. Like I said, he'll probably get a nice raise. But I cannot picture the Cavs committing to him as head coach past this season. I would be very, very surprised if they did that.
The Cavs, in my mind, should be getting their own Kenny Atkinson, their own James Borrego, their own Lloyd Pierce. Like, that's the type of coach you want. I do not know who those guys should be. I'm sure we can dig into that in the next couple months, and we'll do some digging into there. But that to me is the type of coach I would be pursuing, that you want a guy that can develop and be patient and stuff like their own Brett Brown. Like, that's the type of coach you want. I mean, do you disagree with that at all?
No, I 100% agree with you. I'm just the image of Dan Gilbert possibly calling Rick Pitino is now creeping into my head as Pitino apparently wants to coach in the NBA now. So that's the situation that frightens me. The situation you brought up is a lot more attractive. And I'll throw another name out there. What do you think about Becky Hammon?
I want Becky Hammon to go to a situation that like seems capable of like being supportive. And I'm not saying the Cavs couldn't be supportive of a first woman coach, but I don't know if the Cavs are a team that's gonna like not be chaotic. I think she'd be great. I just worry that this is like too chaotic of an organization just to handle all of that well.
No, I agree with you. I just if she was offered the job, do you think she'd take it? Or do you think she's like, you know what, I don't think that's the right situation for me right now?
I don't know. I don't know her. So I don't want to speak to that. But I mean I think she'll be a name that's on the list. I would be shocked if she wasn't. I mean I'm sure there's gonna be the Tom Izzo rumor as well. Like I'm sure that's gonna happen again. Like that would not shock me if, you know, come January, like the Cavs want to pay him $20 million or something like that to like come do things. Like that's the darkest timeline. Like just give me someone who can do development and do things to help Jetty and Colin Sexton and Zizic and whoever they draft number one next year draft. We're going to take one more break and we're going to come back and talk about Kevin Love. But stay tuned for more with myself and Greg Schwartz, Florham Bleacher Report. Today's podcast is also brought to you by the folks over at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. And with Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section or row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners of this podcast an exclusive promo code. And for new customers, they're going to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. So today, go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app, and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase with Vivid Seats is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games and the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. So download the app, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for new customers of Vivid Seats to save $20 on orders of $200 or more. And we're back. Greg, let's wrap it up on this. Kevin Love could be out for a month. We do not know yet that for sure as we record this at 10:27 on Monday, October 29th. Look. I think them being 0-6 certainly plays a part in this. I think you do shut him down. I think you get him healthy. You bring him back when you can. But I just like the interest in the team, the interest in sort of what they do schematically, what their quality of play is going to be like. It's just without their best player, it goes so far out the window for me. And it's another bleak thing in a season that is just going to keep getting bleaker and bleaker. And look, Love has not been good. He's shooting like 32% from the field right now, 29% from three. Has not looked completely like all-star Kevin Love this year. But he's still Kevin Love. He's still very, very good. But if he's not healthy and he's not contributing, that hurts. And it's also just not a good vibe that he's hurt and it's another injury for him, even if it's not the same ones he's had before. And he just signed that big extension. Like, it's just not a great vibe overall around Kevin Love right now.
No, and I think the smart thing, if you have any concerns about that foot at all, shut him down. I mean, it's not like we're competing for the top seed in the Eastern Conference right now. Like, I think you shut him down for as long as it takes. You hopefully bring him back in a month or 2 months or whatever, you know, however long it takes. And then, you know, you're going to get calls for him. And I'm not saying you have to trade him, but you're going to get calls for him. You can't trade him until January 23rd for the 6 month anniversary of this contract extension. So that gives you 3 weeks, about 3.5 weeks between when he can be eligible to be traded and the trade deadline in mid-February. You're going to get calls. I'm not saying the offers are going to be great. I think it's going to depend, you know, if he misses 15 games or 20 games here or whatever, it you know, may end up being with the foot. But then let's say he comes back and he has a really good multi-week stretch or multi-month stretch where he's put up 20-plus points, 10-plus rebounds. His efficiency goes back up. He looks pretty comfortable. You know, the contract's not great. I get that. But you're probably going to get a desperate team, like, I don't know, like a Houston or somebody that thinks, okay, well, you know, we just need one more piece that's really going to push us over the edge. And I think it depends on the offer. I would certainly consider moving him. But it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to collect another top draft pick to go through this year, you know, to see him have a big year and then kind of go into the off season and say, you know, we could bring this guy back. He's 31. He could really help us win next year. Or, you know, if we get a really good offer for him in the summer and he's coming off a strong year, you know, you've got good options there. But that all starts with getting him healthy. And I think that's the most important part right now, is he was shut down for the majority of the preseason because of this foot injury. And, you know, obviously he's missed 22, 23 games each of the last 2 years, roughly 28% of his total time, if you count this year as well. So the most important thing is you get him healthy and then you examine your options with him. My question is, he signed the extension. He says all the right things. He's committed to being here. He doesn't want to go through a rebuild, but he doesn't view it as a rebuild. I think it's quite clear that it's going to be a rebuild now. Will he still be okay with being in Cleveland, or do you think he will actually ask for a trade at some point this year?
I mean, I think you sign Partridge and you sign Kevin Love to that deal is because it's easier to trade him on that deal in theory. I think that's sort of, you have to keep that in mind. You want to make sure you get something for him. It would not shock me if in a year, if they're just like, Kevin, we got to bottom out. Like, he doesn't want a part of that. He's 30 years old now. He's won a title. He's going to want to compete. He's got his money now. He can certainly agitate for that. He got the deal that sort of helps him. I think the team, I don't know if like a team like Houston or one of the league's best teams sort of makes sense for him, but I look at a team like Phoenix, to me, would be a team that if they could put together the right package, like, you know, pair him with Ayton, Booker, like, he could be useful there. Tight with James Jones as well, who's now running that front office, if that counts for anything, possibly. You know, maybe Miami gets crazy and wants to do something. Maybe Charlotte. Like, there are situations where I could see a team, like, really going for that, but I think it has to be a team sort of like that. I do worry, you know, I don't love the idea of doing a full rebuild where you remove all the adults from the room, right? Like, what does it look like if you don't have veterans around that can help young guys and help them develop? And I don't think Kevin Love is too good of an NBA player, too skilled of a player, still in his prime, and even just at the slight at the back end of it at this point. And his game certainly has not adapted particularly well to the modern NBA. I think that's fair to say. I don't know if you want to like remove all the vets from the room. And like, yes, they'll still have Tristan around and Hill and forever longer Korver around and whatnot, but like, a guy like Kevin can help Sexton develop. A guy, he can help Jetty develop. He can help your number one pick next year develop. Like, he's a guy that still has some use, but maybe that's too high of a price to like, be that for a guy. Maybe he's too, like, maybe there's just some, like, limitations on sort of what you're going to ask him to do there. But, like, I don't want to remove, I wouldn't trade him for nothing either. Like, I don't know if you're going to get a good young player and a pick at this point. I think you're probably getting one or the other, and you might have to take some money back just to kind of make it work. But, like, you know, would you take, like, something from Charlotte that you were just like eat Biombo's contract, or take like a bad contract from Phoenix, like TJ Warren's contract to get for them to take Kevin Love? Like, that's sort of what I think you end up doing, and you should get picks for that. You should get, I would prefer picks over kind of meh young players. Like, if they're like, here's Dragan Bender and TJ Warren, like I wouldn't do that. But if you say, here's an unprotected first, like, and TJ Warren, yeah, like maybe I do that. I also just agree with you. Like, I think you shut him down. I want to see. I think there's, if they were 6-0 or 3-3, I wonder if the calculus is different. But at your own 6, you're clearly awful. What's the point of having Kevin Love play through pain when he just signed that new deal? And theoretically, you'd want to have him, like, you can't just assume he's not going to be here. You have to like think that, okay, this could be a guy that is in our team. Why risk anything significant with him?
Yeah, I mean, we're 100% on the same page. The most important thing is you get him healthy. And then you evaluate your options. Phoenix, I like that you said Phoenix. I didn't think about that, because that's a team that, you know, they've obviously tried to get a star for years now. They tried to sign LaMarcus Aldridge. I think they might have had a meeting with Blake Griffin, or were trying to leverage a meeting to try to get him in. They gave Tyson Chandler big money. They've been desperate for a star. And the fact that, yeah, they have that James Jones connection, I didn't think about that. That's a good – I've seen Utah as a potential trade partner. Portland, I always thought, made a lot of sense.
Look, if the Cavs could somehow get the like, and I think McCollum's way more valuable in a vacuum. If they could ever get CJ McCollum back, like, just him and Nance just going to Browns games would like be enough to keep people happy for like 2 years.
Look, if CJ McCollum came to Cleveland and we could just enjoy watching CJ and Larry and like all these like hometown guys just play, I didn't care if they made the playoffs. They'd be so enjoyable to, like, cheer for on and off the court. Like, that'd be great. And, I mean, CJ's obviously a phenomenal player. And I like his podcast, too. It's pretty good. There's been a clamoring on Twitter for CJ McCollum. He's very popular amongst Cavaliers fans that would love for him to come back. I don't know. One of my editors is a Trailblazers fan and lives in Portland. And I've floated that idea to him so many times. I'm like, hey, would you do love for McCollum? And he's always said no. And I don't blame him. CJ's a little bit younger. He's got a pretty good contract. So I don't know if you would trade love to Portland if they would give you him back. I think you'd probably have to add in something else. And if you're giving away your best player, I don't know that you want to attach any draft assets to that, any sort of extra compensation to that. But yeah, Portland would make sense. Utah would make sense. Phoenix, like you said, would make sense. I mean, Houston is always looking for star players. I don't think we could ever rule them out. I would trade them to anybody but Golden State. Screw those guys. I don't want to help them any bit. So anybody else besides them, yeah, I'd be picking up the phone, at least listening.
Who do you start in Love's place for, let's say he's out a month, who do you start for him for in his place for a month?
Well, that's a good question, because we don't have a whole lot of quality backup power forward options. We saw Channing Frye do it for a game. We saw Sam Decker do it for a game. I mean, Channing is probably, at 35 years old, is probably not built to be a starter in the NBA. Sam Decker could probably stand it, but I don't know that he's talented enough to be a starter in the NBA. I think at this point he's fighting his career to be a rotation player, and he'll certainly get the chance to be that. You know, I want to see if Larry Nance can be a floor-stretching, three-point shooting power forward if he was forced into that role. I know spacing is going to be a little tight. If you tried putting him and Thompson, I'm not saying I'd like that, because right away that doesn't sound like a good idea. But size-wise, Nance is probably more of a power forward. Last year, before he came over to Cleveland from the Lakers, he was 50-50 in terms of 50% of his minutes were at the four, 50% of his minutes were at the five, and he's pretty much been a five. But I know he's been working on that three-point shot. He's very athletic. He can guard on the perimeter. If he could shoot threes, I'd say Larry Nance would be a great power forward. But we haven't seen it yet. So until that happens, I guess you stick with Sam Decker as your starting power forward. Maybe Channing Frye gets some minutes off the bench. But there's not a lot of great options to start for Kevin Love right now.
Larry Nance should just be launching threes now. Why not? Like, let's just see if he can do it. Let's just
we're 0-6. Why not?
Yeah, let's just have him start launching threes, Tristan. Just take him if you're open in the corner. Why not? Ping pong balls, not try on for Zion. Like, let's give me all the bad puns you have for tanking. I might go with Decker or Channing. Just keep Nance coming off the bench as the center for now, I guess, and at least give Sexton, like, if it's Channing, like, you can run pick and pops with him. You're not going to be good defensively anyway. Like, what's the point? I don't really care. Like, that is where I'm at right now. I just, like, don't think something like this matters. Like, they're going to be trash, and I just want to, like, I just think it's all about Jetty and Sexton and getting Zizic some minutes, like, and seeing just not being, like, a total tire fire for, like, a week would be, like, a big step forward for this Cavs team. But we're going to wrap it up there. The Cavs do play Tuesday, so we'll see how they look against the Hawks in the first game without Ty Lue. We'll see if there's any more clarity with Larry Jr. We'll see who they start a power forward and see if they have anything more to say about Kevin Love. But you can find Greg's writing at Bleach Report. You can find him on Twitter at CavsGregBR. Greg, when did just we'll kind of just throw it off on this. Yes or no, do the Cavs get their first win this week?
Yes, it's going to be the Larry Drew revenge game for Atlanta firing him. They're going to beat the Hawks and get their first win Tuesday.
Look, Trae Young might drop 45 based on how they defended him last time. So, like, you're a little more optimistic than me. But we'll see if they do. I think it would feel good for them if they could actually pick up a win. But we'll be back tomorrow recapping that game. And thank you again to Greg for coming on. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for October 30th. I'm Chris Manning. Find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. Find the pod on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Talk to you again tomorrow.